Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 13 of the Last Round Podcast. I'm Danny Z with my co-host, Michael Shepard. Uh-oh, we had some audio technicalities right there, but we're back. Only a split second, Mike. How's it going, Mike?
I'm good. Another crazy weekend of boxing.
Man.
Seems like we say that every week.
Crazy emotional weekend.
It was an emotional weekend.
We're waiting on the arrival of... recently signed by Golden Boy Promotions, James the Beast Wilson. He's actually running a little late, stuck in traffic. So hopefully he gets here soon. He'll jump in and then we'll get into his interview. But right off the bat, we're just going to go into the reviews of fights. We'll start at MSG in New York on ESPN this past Saturday night. Vasily Lomachenko decisions by unanimous decision, Jose Pedraza, and unifies the WBA, WBO lightweight titles at 135 pounds. What'd you think, Mike?
Kind of an unusual fight. I kind of thought Lomachenko was going to go in there and really, you know, take it to Jose Pedraza. Maybe even get him out of there. I said last week around 6 or 7, but Jose Pedraza is probably one of the best performances we've seen from him so far. Would he get blown out by Gervonta Davis only a few fights ago? I thought Lomachenko would do the same sort of thing to him, you know, make him either quit or take him out. But Pedraza seemed to go in there and actually he used Lomachenko's style against Lomachenko.
I noticed that. I was the same way. I think we both picked Lomachenko last week, and I was a little bit surprised in terms of that Lomachenko didn't really get him out of there. I mean, he did almost stop him in the 11th, I believe. So he almost did, but Pedraza got back up. You know, you got to give it to him in that regard. I was talking with somebody else after the fight, and I mean, Lomachenko isn't really like a big guy.
No.
I honestly think 135 is his ceiling. I don't think he can go to 140. Like, he's fighting bigger guys. These are big guys.
Yeah. I think if he goes up to, obviously, I mean, at 135, like we just kind of touched on, he struggles to get people out of there. He doesn't have that one-punch power. It's more of an accumulation of punches, you know, where people decide not to come out for the next round because, you know, they're just getting beaten down skill-wise.
I was still impressed by it. Like, he still did his thing and you know, how he knocked him down a few times in the 11th. I was still impressed by it, even though he didn't stop him.
Yeah, I think one of the problems with Lomachenko is because his record's so good, his amateur record is so good, we've put him up there on a pedestal because yeah. I thought the performance was really good, but yeah, when I was on Twitter looking at what people were saying, people were like, oh, you know, Lomachenko doesn't look so good today. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of thinking, dude, he's still, like in the 11th round,
yeah.
He annihilated Pedraza. I was kind of surprised that his corner didn't actually throw the towel in that round because, you know, Pedraza was just getting beaten on.
Yeah.
I think sometimes he kind of gets that negative press because we've put him up there on such a pedestal and then people keep saying like, oh, you know, he's the pound for pound great. He's going to be, you know, like a one time in a generation. So, you know, when he struggles maybe a little bit or, you know, maybe to me, Pedraza did well. I didn't think Lomachenko was doing badly.
No, not at all.
So.
No, not at all. I think Pedraza did a lot better than we expected.
Yeah.
But I think Lomachenko's just been... especially stopping having these guys quit on the stool the last couple fights and you know, and now he has more exposure, fight on ESPN and all that stuff. He's got people accustomed to him stopping guys and just outclassing them and just looking like 10 times better than they do. So when he doesn't, like, you know, it's just like when Mayweather fought Maidana the first time. Maidana, yeah, he fought dirty, but like, you know, he got close and yeah, he lost, but it was almost kind of like a win. Like, oh, Floyd's losing it. He's getting old. And then what happened? They get in the rematch. Like, Maidana got figured out.
Yeah.
So, Lomachenko still fought extremely well. But, you know, then people compare it to Gervonta Davis's performance, how he stopped Pedraza in just a ridiculous fashion. So, like, oh, well, Davis stopped him easily. And so, you know, there's comparisons, especially since they're in the same weight range. But no, I still think Lomachenko's ridiculously good, and you know, there's nothing to critique about the performance at all. It just, I was cool with it.
Where does Lomachenko go from here? Then he kind of cleared out that division, kind of.
I'm glad that he called out Mikey. But I mean, would he have called him out if Mikey didn't have a fight lined up already?
This kind of been going back and forth since. Remember the when the was it the ESPN when you were in the green room and there was that picture of them sat next to each other.
Right.
They've kind of been going back and forth for a while now. You know, I remember going to Mikey's training camp when he was fighting Broner.
Yeah.
And speaking to him and his brother and his dad, and they were all kind of like, yeah, you know, we'll fight Lomachenko. We think Mikey, you know, it's a good size. We think Mikey will actually take him out. We kind of think we know a good way of you know, getting around Lomachenko's style, you know, his fast footwork. So, I mean, he's already daring to be great, stepping up to 147. So fighting somebody at his actual natural weight category for Mikey, obviously, at 135, I don't think Mikey's going to be scared of him. You know, I think it's a fight that could be made. I think maybe the only thing would be the top rank dilemma from Mikey.
If Mikey, for some reason, beats Spence, like, you know, some miracle, I don't think he's going back down. I think he's going to stay at 147 and fight all those welterweights and make all that money.
I mean, money-wise and legacy-wise, it would be good, but, you know, I think it's a huge step up.
That's a huge if he beats Spence, which a lot of us obviously aren't picking him to pick to beat Spence, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. But, I mean, especially if he loses to Spence, like, he has to. I mean, Lomachenko's probably going to fight one more fight during this time, maybe March, April, around the same time, to try to keep the same time frame, and then hopefully they fight towards the latter half of next year, 2019. I mean, we'll see, but there's nobody else for Lomachenko to fight.
I mean, the only ones I'd like to see him is obviously the Mikey Garcia fight. I'd like to see him the Jorge Linares rematch. Linares has already said that he would come back down a weight division to do that.
I can see Linares fight. I mean, Mikey going at it,
and because Loma went 12 rounds, and as we touched on, Gervonta Davis got Pedraza out of there.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind seeing that fight.
I could see Tank Davis and Mikey at 135,
and Mikey,
yeah. I mean, Tank's a big kid. He's missed weight a couple times already. Mikey's got a belt at 135. He says he can still make it. He still wants to defend it. I mean, I think it would work.
Because
they both fight under Heyman.
Heyman Maris isn't official yet, is it?
It's not. I don't think so.
I don't think it's been signed and signed, sealed, and delivered yet. But
I mean, Lomachenko needs those fights more than they need him at the moment because of his limited options. There's only so many people he could fight.
I could see him, you know, having a little easy one and fighting someone like Beltran in March because it's easy to make.
Yeah, I could see it, but I mean, people are gonna
a little tick over.
Yeah, but we'll see. Going on Saturday night, you know, so it could be the surprise of the year. Could be the surprise of the year. Emmanuel Navarrete decisions Isaac Dogbe for the WBO super bantamweight title. Did anybody see this coming? We didn't see. We picked Dogbe last week.
We both picked Dogbe, and we couldn't have been more wrong. I didn't see it coming. Looking at Navarrete's record, obviously never fought an outside of Mexico. I think Dogbe, or either Top Rank, you know, obviously picked him, thinking to themselves, you know, it'd be a nice tick over for Dogbe before he fights a bigger name later down the line. Interviews leading up to the fight, Dogbe was already kind of talking about what he was going to do, how he wanted to be like a Pacquiao and fight in multiple weight divisions, and then, you know, go back and help out the people in Ghana with the money he was going to make, similar to what Pacquiao does in the Philippines. So I don't know whether it was, you know, Dogbe looking past the fight, you know, not having a good training camp, or the fact that he was fighting someone who looked like a giant.
Yeah, the reach
was,
he had a huge reach advantage,
and that Navarrete, every single punch was like he was just trying to knock Dogbe out. I don't know how he didn't tire throwing so many punches, because even his jab looked like he was trying to knock Dogbe's head off.
Oh yeah.
And in some of the rounds it was kind of getting hard to watch at the end. I think it was maybe the 11th where Dogbe was just taking such a beating. I was hoping that his dad was just going to throw the towel in and just save Dogbe for another day, because his eyes and his face were swelling up really, really bad. And, you know, Dogbe comes across like a nice guy, You know, in all of his interviews, he's a bit of a character.
Yeah, he is.
You know, so I was hoping they were just going to throw the towel in because he was so many rounds behind. Yeah. They were just looking for that one punch knockout, but it didn't even look like it was going to come. I think obviously they just got it completely wrong on the day. Looking at the size difference and the reach, Dogbe just couldn't get inside of him to try and.
I think Dogbe just underestimated him. He's probably I'm going to go past this guy and then I'm going to try to make the fight with the bigger guys and see. But no, he lost the title, man, and that was probably, that could be the upset of the year.
Yeah, I would have said so. You know, Navrate, like, I think everybody was saying that Dogbe was going to win. I didn't, on all the podcasts, everywhere I was reading on the internet, I didn't see anybody.
I mean, he was a logical choice.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, it is what it is. But I wouldn't be surprised if they make an immediate rematch. Don't be surprised about that. So I'm assuming that's going to be a immediate rematch just because Navarrete is signed with Zanfer Promotions.
Okay.
You know, usually, I mean, unless Top Rank jumps in and says, like, hey, you know, we'll co-promote, we'll put you on the, you know, ESPN and stuff like that, which they could. And he's also from Mexico, so that gives him the country of Mexico behind him, and they can build him up. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised about that. Top Rank signs him for maybe two fights to
see
it.
Pretty much how that's how they got Dogbe.
Yeah. Yeah, because he defeated Jesse Magdaleno.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exact same thing. They took an option on him.
So they could see it. They could probably do this. And they're like, oh, well, he's from Mexico. He's got a title now. We'll co-promote. Let's build him up.
Yeah.
I could see that. But I wouldn't be surprised if they have an immediate rematch. So, and that's probably within the next 2-3 months. As of right now, that could be upset of the year. I got to remember the other ones. But, I think it was the opening television belt. Teofimo Lopez improves to 11-0 with 9 KOs as he knocks out in the first round Mason Menard in 44 seconds. Man, what a nasty. And Menard's a veteran.
Yep.
He's a veteran, and he just, that straight right hand just, and it's like, it's one of those, like, it was like a cartoon knockout. Like, it was like a delayed reaction, and then he just kind of like realizes, like, oh, I'm done. And then he just face planted.
Yeah, you don't see many knockouts where people face plant. You could tell, you like, he's going down face first. The referee's just going to have to wave it off. Teofimo Lopez, just every single performance, he just seems to be getting better and better. Everything just seems to be falling into place for him. You know, he's had those first round knockouts. He's got the good celebrations. He talks well. Yeah. He's got the image. You know, in this fight, that's pretty much what we wanted from him. We wanted another big, you know, performance to end the year. He's probably going to be up there in, you know, I said that we're going to do an end of year review of, you know, performance of the year, young fighter of the year. He's definitely going to be in the list, the category for, you know, young fighter of the year.
Didn't he say that he's, I think he wants to try to get a world title shot next year?
Yeah. And then he was, you know, he was talking a bit smack on Lomachenko.
Yeah.
Saying he's nothing special. So, you know, he's getting himself out there. Definitely he's, using the social media, using his interviews to try and build his profile. He definitely knows what he's doing.
Hey, it's working, man.
Yeah.
You know, so far so good. And he's looking good in these last few performances. And he's building his name up on ESPN. And then I think what really helped him out was, I think when we touched on it last week, was that whole Fortnite dance. It got picked up by a bunch of media outlets that weren't even boxing related. So that was huge. So far so good. And I think he might get a title shot next year. I you know, if you asked me before this fight, I would have said no. But I think he might now. I think he might. So I think within the first maybe 6 months, I think we'll see him in there. Or at least they're going to try to make one. But, you know, we'll see. And then moving on to what some people were calling a funeral. HBO Boxing's last scheduled broadcast, which was very sad. I don't know if you saw the opening montage and the closing montage and then Lampley, Killerman, and Jones talking to end the show and everything. The HBO doing their video montages and their editing, I think they're the best in terms of comparing them to, you know, Showtime and stuff. I mean, I like Showtime. You know, they put on a good show in terms of like their editing montages and everything. But I mean, HBO, there was something about HBO that always did it for me. But it was also on Saturday night. Cecilia Breakhus decisions Alexandra Magdaziak. How did I pronounce it last week? Magdaziak?
Magdaziak, I think, yeah.
So Cecilia retains her IBF, IBO, WBA, WBO, and WBC welterweight world titles, and she improves to 35-0. I mean, a lot of people picked her to win. You know, she's obviously the undisputed at the moment, pound for pound, best female fighter in the world. She's been that for a while. I mean, what do you think? Who can she fight next?
I think
we talked about Shields, because Shields was also on the card. She improved to 8-0. Decision Femke Hermas for the IBF, WBA, and WBC middleweight championship.
I thought that it was a better performance than the last time when we were both there, where she kind of struggled in that fight and got dropped.
She got dropped, yeah.
This fight was definitely a more polished performance from me. I thought she deserved the unanimous decision. Same as Clarissa Shields. Clarissa Shields looked a little bit better than the last performances. You know, she really, you could tell, obviously, the change in trainer, because I believe she's now with, is it John Jackson?
John David Jackson?
John, yeah. I believe she's with him now. She had a lovely left hook that she was, you know, popping out quite often, trying to take Femke Hermas out of there. Tried to get the stoppage, but just couldn't get it. I believe that Shields has actually been trying to get Cecilia to fight her, but
I think they want to try to do it at 154.
Yeah, because Cecilia doesn't want to leave the welterweight division, and I think Shields is kind of she's unsure whether she can get down to the 147. You know, obviously Cecilia's obviously older. She's been at that weight for quite a while.
I think Shields beats her though.
I think that's the case. I think Clarissa Shields might be too big, too powerful for him. And yeah, Obviously the age gap's obviously quite a few years, what, like 13 years or something like that.
Shields is going to try to make that fight. I think they've already said that it's tentative, or it's supposed to happen in, January, February?
I don't think Cecilia wants it.
No, not that fight. She's Shields is supposed to fight Lady Hammer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
so that was supposed to happen actually on this card, I think.
Yeah, but it got postponed due to injury.
Yeah, so but I think they're supposedly a rent or a tentative agreement for them to fight.
She was there.
Yeah, she was there.
She was there at the fight.
So I think once Shields, because obviously I think Shields is going to beat her. If she beats her, then she's going to start calling her out. Like, let's fight. I'll go to 154 and it's me in the middle. So,
because it was funny after the fight, Cecilia Breakers was kind of trying to change the subject and talk more about fighting Cyborg. Because remember when we were there last
Cyborg
year?
Cyborg was there.
Yeah.
She was there with Shields.
She walked to the ring with her.
She walked to the ring with Shields, and she had the UFC belt on. She put, because when I saw that, I was like, holy crap. I was like, she's here. I was like, that's cool. I mean, hey, you know, Cyborg is going to bring a lot of eyes. They know it. Like, and if Cyborg wins, because they need, right now, female boxing needs that one star. They need that one star, like a Ronda Rousey or something. And I think Cyborg at least would bring MMA eyes over. And you know, that's what they need. They want eyes on the female side of the sport.
Could you remember when we were there last year and Cyborg was in attendance and she had that t-shirt? Cyborg against Breakers, summer 2019.
I could see it happening.
Yeah, it seems to be. That's what they're going to do. You know, Cyborg, I remember seeing an interview from that weekend where she was saying that she'd been an MMA champion, she'd been a kickboxing champion, and she now wanted to try boxing and try and be a champion.
Where are they going to fight now? There's no more HBO. Unless HBO jumps back in, like, a one-off.
Probably wherever, you know, Cecilia ends up, whether she ends up
somebody would pick up the fight. They would.
Yeah.
But it does, I mean, it's because of Cyborg. They'll pick it up. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the UFC picks it up, like, hey, you know, we'll do it. So, I'm interested in that. And then I thought it was interesting that she walked out Shields, and I was like, what the hell?
Because she trains and she's friends with Cecilia Breakers.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen on Instagram that they train together.
Which is kind of ironic. But and then moving on to El Gallo Estrada. Juan Francisco Estrada improves to 38-3 with a technical decision in 7 rounds over Victor Mendez. Chocolatito Gonzalez was supposed to be in Estrada's spot. But, of course, he had the surgery and they had to get him out of there. But they got Estrada in there. And I like Estrada. You know, he comes to fight. He's been on a couple Superfly cards. So, you know, it was an exciting fight. You know, they went at it. They did their thing. I mean, what'd you think?
I thought Estrada looked good.
Yeah.
For coming in on a
short notice.
I know he was obviously in training camp anyway, because he was hoping to get a fight later in the you know, the start of next year. I thought he looked good. He came in. I thought, like you said, he came to fight good. Probably the of the TV cards, it was probably the best fight, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be good to see where he goes from here. You know, I think we kind of expected him to beat Victor Mendez. Be interesting to see, you know, whether he gets a big fight on the next Superfly card, which should probably be, you know, around Easter time. They tend to come out. So it'd be interesting to see what happens on there.
Yeah. I mean, just depending on what network they're on now that HBO's gone. But, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Whether we'll see another Superfly, whether there's going to be some channel that picks it up. Because where is Tom Loughran? Where do you think he'll land with all of his?
Well, I don't know. From the little tidbits that we found today on the Nevada State Athletic Commission,
mm-hmm.
You know, maybe points in that direction, which seems plausible. That's where everybody was guessing, anyways. But you know, we'll touch on that later. And then moving on to the Sheffield Arena in Sheffield, UK. Your home turf over there on DAZN. Kell Brook. Excuse me. Where did that come from? Kell Brook defeats Michael Zarafa by unanimous decision by scores of 118-110, 119-109, 117-111. This was a final eliminator for the WBA Junior Middleweight World Title. What'd you think? Kell Brook, is he still got it?
I thought it was I think Amir Khan actually said it a few weeks back. It wasn't the best decision for Amir Khan to take that fight. He came out, to me, looking pretty disjointed display. It looked like he was just using his chin as a line of defense instead of actually kind of, you know, bobbing and weaving, getting himself in and out of the pocket like he used to do. I thought Kell Brook might actually be over the hill. It was a pretty disappointing performance, in my opinion. I think
that's what I heard. Yeah. I didn't watch the fight, but I heard it was, if
anything, that gives Amir Khan a lot more confidence about taking the fight. If Amir Khan actually was, you know, kind of thinking, shall I take that fight? Because it's a big British fight and he's worried about losing. Kell Brook looked pretty bad.
Right.
He definitely, you know, he wouldn't. The fight on points is now the final eliminator for Jarrett Hurd. I think Hurd will absolutely destroy him.
Oh, yeah. But I could see, you know, I don't think Hurd would go over to the UK to fight Brook, but it would make that fight a lot bigger if he came over to the UK, because more people would show up.
Yeah. Well, Kell Brook struggled to sell out the Sheffield Arena. They were actually doing, I think it's a company called JD Sports back home in England, where if you spent £75 in the shop, they gave you a free ticket to the fight.
Oh, wow.
Because they were struggling to sell it out. So that just kind of goes to show, you know, Kell Brook.
His drawing power is not.
It's never really been there. That's why he's always, I think, tried to live off the back of Amir Khan a little bit by, you know, trying to call him out, because Amir Khan.
For some reason, Khan still has like semi-drawing power, like he still does decent.
Even over here, when you see him at the fights in LA, people are always crowding him, and you know he's got that Olympic pedigree. So as soon as he became a pro, obviously everybody in Britain jumped on the bandwagon. You know,
right?
He got that big contract, and you know he's never really in, you know, boring fights, because you know he either wins pretty well or he gets knocked out spectacularly. So you always want to watch an Amir Khan fight.
Yeah, but I mean, where does Brook go from here? Does he stay at 154? I mean, Khan is rumored to fight Crawford. That's still not officially announced. But then Brook is like in the sidelines and saying, what the hell? What about me? I thought we were going to make a fight. And then, I don't know. I honestly think Khan goes the Crawford route.
Yeah, I agree. I think Khan should go the Crawford route. I think we touched on that last week. To me, I think the Kell Brook fight will always be there. For him, you know, it's a $5 million guaranteed payday. It's a nice payday for him, plus he also gets a chance at Crawford's belt, you know? And to me, a Crawford, if he actually does manage to get the scalp, that's a bigger scalp that's going to be on his resume for when he retires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kell Brook, unfortunately, at the minute, he's not really a big name. He's not really a big draw, and just can't really need to fight him when he can fight someone bigger, probably over here, you know?
Right.
In TC, you know, TC's cut in people's pound for pound top five.
But I think top two, him and Loma kind of interchange there sometimes, or even top three.
Why not dare to be great, you know, and fight him?
I mean, we'll see. But I think Brook's options are running a little low here. So, you know, I think it's in his best interest, especially if Khan goes against Crawford. It's in Brook's best interest to just stay at 154 and try to fight these big guys like Hurd, even Lara, guys like that, and try to put his name back on the marquee.
Yeah, I think he needs to.
So, going on, Is it John O'Carroll?
John O'Carroll. He had a split draw against, I think, is it Guillaume Fresno? I think that's how you pronounce it.
Carroll was due to face Tevin Farmer, though, if he won the fight, right?
Yeah, this was an eliminator to fight Tevin Farmer. John O'Carroll has been going back and forth with Farmer on Instagram, you know, posting videos, talking smack to each other. Carroll didn't really have the best performance. Maybe could have even have actually lost the fight, but maybe got a little of a home decision. The Guillaume Frenois, the French guy, came in with a lot of experience. You know, he had about 48 fights. So, you know, he knew what he was doing inside the ring. Carroll was actually getting caught quite a lot. After the fight, though, Tevin Farmer and Carroll were still going at it on Instagram, posting videos and stuff like that to each other. Yeah. So I think Tevin Farmer wants the Carroll fight, and I'm thinking that he may get give him the chance anyway, even though it was a draw. So he probably thinks, you know, Farmer probably thinks he'll beat Carroll.
Right.
So it looks like he's probably going to give him the chance down the line, I assume. And they're both with Matchroom. They're both with
Eddie Hearn. Yeah, it's going to be an easy fight to make.
Exactly.
So the negotiation's already there, the foundation.
Exactly.
Moving on to Friday the 14th from the American Bank Center in Corpus Christi, Texas. Top rank on ESPN Plus, which is the app. Gilberto Ramirez defends his WBO super middleweight title against 25-1 Jesse Hart, which is a rematch. It's a rematch from their exciting fight. Was it in 2017 when they fought, or did they fight this early? They fought in 2017, right?
Yeah, it was September 2017. It was a good fight.
So, that was an exciting fight.
Yeah.
So they're rematching. So I'm cool with it. Especially if it's anything close to the first one, I mean, I'm cool with it. They both came to fight. I like Hart. I like Jesse Hart.
He's never in a boring fight.
He never is.
No.
Never is. So, I mean, we'll see how this goes. You know what? I'm going to go Hart on this one.
You think he's going to get revenge?
I think he's going to get revenge, and then it's going to be a trilogy. That's just me. I'm going with my gut.
I'm going to go with Gilberto Ramirez. I think he's just...
My mind says Ramirez, but my gut says Hart.
Yeah, it's kind of like a clash of styles. You know, Jesse Hart is kind of one of those guys who just comes in there, comes to fight. Gilberto Ramirez is a little bit more technical, you know, kind of picks his shots a little bit more. So I'm going to go with the home fire. I'm going to go with Gilberto Ramirez. I think he gets this and then hopefully moves his on. And, you know, I think it's about time he starts to try to unify
in
that division. This is hopefully going to be his last fight.
He should fight Bivol. Bivol says he's willing to go to 168.
Yeah, that would be a great fight.
That'd
if they could make that.
Fight. Yeah. That'd be a great fight. And now that Bivol doesn't have a network, HBO's gone. He was fine on HBO. So, you know, like, hey, scoop him up. And then also on that card, Arnold Barboza Jr., 19-0, faces off against Manuel Demarius Lopez, 14-2-1. Obviously, Barboza Jr. is the name in this fight, and probably the favorite. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Arnold Barboza's a local fighter to us.
Right.
I think it's a fight for him, another little tick-over fight. He's kind of one of those fighters that's built up a good record, has quite a good style, but he's kind of gone under the radar at the minute.
Yeah.
A top-ranked fighter, obviously. And I'm actually expecting big things out of him. I think he should win this. He'll be 20-0 for the end of 2018. And I think 2019 will actually be kind of like a come-out year for him.
Right.
As long as they match him well, I could see he could be kind of one of those ones that's going to just jump onto the big scene in 2019. So hopefully he gets a good performance and, you know, proves me right for next year.
Proves you right, Mike. Proves you right.
I hope so.
And then ongoing right there on that same card, Michaela Mayer, 8-0, faces off against Kalista Salgado, 17-10-3. I mean, obviously, is it Mayer or Meyer? I think it's Meyer. Michaela Mayer? I feel like I've heard it pronounced two different ways.
Yeah, I say Mayer, but I'm probably wrong.
You're probably wrong.
Yeah.
But I'll say Mayer. We'll both be wrong at the same time. We'll go down together. So Michaela Mayer is obviously the favorite here. That's who they're trying to build up. So I'm assuming she'll get the decision win and kind of go from there. And then ongoing on that card, which I think is a television bout, Jamel Herring is actually a friend of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Versus Adelison Dos Santos. What is this guy? The MMA fighter? Isn't there a UFC fighter named Dos Santos?
Yes, there is. A couple called Dos Santos, I think, in the UFC. I think it's another it's pretty much the same as Barboza. I think Jamal Herrig will go in as favorite. I think this is a good fight for him to end the year, and he's another one that I think will have a big 2019. Obviously, he follows us on Twitter, and I've been kind of obviously following him, watching his progress. He looks good. He looks in shape. He's looking really ripped for this fight. Obviously, he's one of the guys that hangs out with Terence Crawford,
right,
and that crew. They have that little house where they all, you know, live together, stay together, train together.
They all do the thing
so,
over there.
Yeah, you know, he's got a good group of people around him, and I think he's going to be one of those ones to watch in 2019 as well. You know, Top Rank have a pretty good stable at the minute.
They do.
A good stable of fighters. They do.
They got a solid stable, and, you know, but eventually everybody's going to have to get along here, all these promotional companies, and put their fighters against each other. So,
yeah, exactly.
Hopefully we get a lot more of that in 2019 and as we progress on. And then Saturday the 15th, biggest star in boxing, Canelo Alvarez returns against your favorite fighter of the week, Rocky Fielding, who towers over him. Canelo's moving up to 168 for the WBA regular super middleweight title, fighting for the first time in Madison Square Garden. Obviously, Alvarez is the favorite. This is the first fight on DAZN for Canelo, too. So that's a big deal. I mean, does Fielding really have a chance?
He's got a puncher's chance. I think that's about it.
Yeah, but everybody's got a puncher's chance.
Yeah, I mean, Canelo obviously picked Rocky Fielding to try and get that WBA regular belt. You know, he gets another world championship at a new weight category.
Yeah, he beats a bigger guy.
Yeah, yeah. So
I think Canelo got really confident when he was able to fight Chavez Jr. and then fight Triple G twice.
Mm-hmm.
So he got confident in fighting these bigger guys, where he's just like, okay, I got this. Like, I feel confident enough. Like, I mean, he wasn't about to fight a Rocky Fielding like 2 years ago, even though he probably still would have beat him. But now that he's fought, you know, two pretty solid guys in terms of size and skill in terms of Triple G, you know, he has the confidence. He's like, yeah, I can fight this guy, you know. So, I mean, obviously this show, I think that there was a video I was watching on Golden Boy released something where they said that at the moment, or I don't know how recent it was. It could be sold out by now, but it was like 15,000 tickets have been sold. And then the capacity is like 18,000. So it looks like it's on its way to a sellout. So obviously Canelo is the draw there. But, you know, what's the plane ride from, what's the flight time from England to New York? Like 6 hours?
I think it's about 6 hours, yeah.
Hey, so
that's too bad.
So there's probably a lot of UK fans coming over to cheer on Rocky Fielding. So.
Yeah, he will. Rocky Fielding's got a good following. He's from a big boxing city in Liverpool. And obviously, I think, you know, the plane ride's only 6 hours. The flights to New York aren't crazily expensive. So I think he'll probably have a good following over there.
Right.
But yeah, like you said, touched on, I think Canelo really should win. I think Rocky Fielding is not going to outbox him. So I think he's going to have to go for the knockout. So I don't see this going the full 12 rounds, but I think Canelo will actually win. I think he'll win in probably like one of the later rounds, around nine. I think he'll knock out Fielding.
I could see that. And I think he's going to be going for the body. He's going to go for the body, slow him down.
Because Rocky's so much taller. The body's going to be like an option. It's going
to
be there.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Especially with these bigger guys.
Chopping down a tree.
Yeah. So, and Canelo's obviously a smart fighter. So, so it looks like we're both going Canelo. And then, you think Triple G is going to be in attendance? I don't think so.
Good question.
You know who the X Factor is here? Who's going to be in attendance? Chavez Jr. He wants a rematch at 168. I'm telling you. He wants it. I think he's already mentioned. He was like, yeah, he's like, if he fought me at my weight, I could beat him. It's like, oh, shut up. Like, what are you doing?
I don't know. I think Chavez Jr., you know, he's he's about done, isn't he? He's not really had not good performances. He got pulled from the recent card that he was supposed to be on by his dad because he said he wasn't in, you know, good enough shape. He wasn't training right and stuff like that. He wasn't ready.
I mean, I honestly don't know. Like what we touched on at the beginning of the show, on the Nevada State Athletic Commission's website, when you go on the commission's website, any respected commission, not respected, but any, you know, commission site, usually they have a schedule of promoters who reserve the arena in their city or in their state, at least. And Golden Boy Promotions, in association with Triple G Promotions, had reserved May 4th, Cinco de Mayo weekend, the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. And of course, we put that out on social media and it got picked up a lot of steam. And then within a few hours, or at least before the end of the day, essentially, Triple G Promotions' name was taken out and it was only Golden Boy Promotions. So, I mean, that happens all the time. Promoters reserve dates and stuff like that. And for the last couple of years, Cinco de Mayo and Mexican Independence Day weekend have been Canelo's dates. So that's a given that Golden Boy is going to reserve those dates at in Vegas usually. But having Triple G's promoter there, was that a form of viral marketing? Do they know what they're doing? And they said it was going to be a fight on DAZN. So is that saying that Triple G, hey, I'm going DAZN, which makes the most sense for him?
Yeah, it was interesting to see that and put that out on social media just to see what people were saying.
I saw somebody who even said, like, oh, this is fake news. Like, these guys edited it. Like, it doesn't say that. And then I think they were going back and forth with somebody, like, you idiot. Like, they removed it. Like, of course. Because, like, you know, it, obviously, you know, it picked up a lot of steam. It got retweeted, liked, and shared and everything. So, you know, I'm sure that Golden Boy and some other people saw it. Like, hey, then, you know. It could, but it's viral marketing. So, you know.
Yeah. Like you said, you know, obviously, they've, I imagine, obviously, booked the date just in advance, you know, so they don't lose it to somebody else. But it's still the biggest fight out there.
Yeah.
For Canelo and for Triple G. So yeah. I think we'll probably see a third one, whether we see that in May or whether we see that in September. I think we'll see. We'll definitely see it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And if it doesn't happen, I honestly think Canelo fights. I don't know. Can he? I mean, because in order to sell out like a T-Mobile arena or at least get close to it, it's a 20,000 seat arena. Like, he needs another name. Like, yeah. I mean, Canelo can sell tickets, but like when you need to sell out a big arena like that over here, especially in Vegas, like you kind of need another name. Because I was thinking like he's probably going to fight Demetrius Andrade if he try to unify. But I mean, like Andrade's not going to help sell tickets. I mean, with his titles, yeah, he's got the middleweight title now. But I could see, I mean, if he fought like Billy Joe Saunders, Billy Joe Saunders were bringing over UK fans.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it goes. But from the looks of it, it looks like Triple G's likely going to sign with DAZN. And Cinco de Mayo weekend, the trilogy. So
you heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Canelo versus Triple G 3 on DAZN. On DAZN. And also on that card, Tevin Farmer versus Francisco Fonseca. Tank Davis actually stopped Francisco Fonseca. And him and Tevin Farmer have kind of been, you know, kind of parallel in terms of fighting, but people have always picked Davis or anything. So, I mean, I'm picking Farmer on this one. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's another win for Farmer. He had a good performance last time out. He's a skillful fighter. He just obviously is one of those ones he kind of blows a little bit hot and cold.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously since, you know, he's had his world title, made one defense, and obviously he's obviously hopefully going to be fighting another British fighter in John O'Carroll.
Yeah.
Later down the line, so I pick Farmer to actually finish Fonseca. I think he'd finish him in actually like around seven. I think it'll take him.
I'm going five.
Well, I think because Farmer's one of those guys who, you know, tries to work out what people are gonna do. You know, like Lomachenko, like he'll throw a few things.
He's calculated.
Yeah, he's calculated. He doesn't really waste many shots.
Yeah.
So I think it'll take a couple of rounds to warm up, and then I think he'll go in and he'll take him out.
Yeah.
In about round seven.
And then we go on to another dangerous middleweight. Even though he's has a couple losses, he's still extremely dangerous. David Lemieux, Canada's favorite son, David Lemieux, faces off against Torino Johnson, 20-2. Obviously, Lemieux's been on the last couple Canelo cards, or at least fights in close proximity to Canelo cards. Because, you know, if they can't make a fight with Triple G or, you know, a big fight like that, Lemieux's always right there. Especially if you put Lemieux in New York, then you can get those Canadian fans to come across. And now that Canelo's fighting in New York this Saturday, he's put his presence there. People have got to see him. If he fights Lemieux, puts his titles on against up against Lemieux in Madison Square Garden again, then you get those Canadian fans, and then you get all the fans that want to see Canelo. So, I mean, like anything, like it's a business in terms of geography. If you put it in New York, that's where you're going to have the best option to make some money, because then you get all the Canadian fans across the border who want to come see Lemieux and they want to see Canelo. So I see that as a plan B option right there. And then moving on, Katie Taylor faces off against Eva Wahlstrom for the IBF and WBA lightweight title. Obviously, Katie Taylor is trying to build up her name. I mean, I think she's going to take it.
Yeah, I think it should be a win for Katie Taylor. I think another victory for her. I think it'd be unanimous decision. Most women's fights seem to go all the rounds, unfortunately. But where does she go from here? It's one of those things at the minute, the women's division is kind of a little bit shallow. You know,
yeah.
There's not too many great fighters that you can make those big matchups. It seems to be the need to move from division to division, you know, move up and down to get those big fights. So,
yeah.
Hopefully down the line, you know, Katie Taylor, she seems to have jumped in. Eva Wahlstrom is one of the better fighters in the women's division. So, hopefully this will be a good performance from them. And, you know, they need some big fights that are going to catch the attention of more fans, like you were kind of touching on before.
Oh, yeah.
They need a few names that are going to bring the eyes to women's boxing, which they don't really have at the minute, unfortunately.
Honestly, I think that's what they're trying to do, Cyborg.
Yeah.
Cyborg would bring eyes. She'd bring MMA fans. So,
she's got that name.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. We'll see how 2019 shapes up for women's boxing. And then we go on to Saddam Ali, 26-2, faces off against Mauricio Herrera. Herrera was supposed to be on the show last week, but he got a little sick. So hopefully we can get him on, like we mentioned, in the first quarter of 2019. I think that's a pretty good matchup. I know Herrera is kind of like, hasn't really been the same the last couple of years. But Ali's coming off a couple losses and all that stuff. So I think it's a good fight to put them up against each other to kind of see who goes forward here. I'm going Herrera on this one.
You're going to go the local guy?
I'm going to go the local guy.
Oh, God. I'm going to go Ali just because, you know, neither of them have been that active over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But I think Ali has just been more active. So I think I'm going to go with Saddam Ali in this. I'd like to pick the local guy in Herrera, but I think I'm going to go with Saddam Ali. Herrera just hasn't been that active. And when he has been, his last couple of fights have been at Fantasy Springs, you know, local to here. And he haven't really been against the biggest names. You know, obviously his last one being against Soto Caraz,
right,
at the Fantasy Springs when I was there, and which actually was kind of a close fight.
Yeah, it was.
It could have been, you know, it could have been a draw, or it could have even have gone in the way of Soto Caraz. You know, so I think Saddam Ali has just been in with the better people lately, been more active, which I think is going to go in his favor.
Yeah. So we'll see. That's an intriguing matchup, though. I'm excited to see that. And then the next big star,
Golden
Boxing.
Boy.
In boxing. Ryan Garcia, 16-0, faces off against Braulio Rodriguez, 19-3. This is going to be the first fight under the tutelage of Eddie Reynoso and Chepo Reynoso. So I'm really interested to see how he does, how they've been training him, if he puts it to use. Is he going to get in there and try to stick to the game plan, and then is he going to get overwhelmed and go back to his old roots? I mean, what's going to happen? I'm intrigued to see how this pans out. I really am, especially in New York, Madison Square Garden. This is a big deal. This is a big deal.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I want to see how Ryan Garcia has improved over the last, since changing trainers. Here he is. Here's the guest, James the Beast Wilson.
He made it. James the Beast Wilson. He made it. LA traffic gets us all.
Man, about 2.5 hours, baby.
It gets all of us.
40 miles.
It gets all of us. But he finally made it. He made it right on time. We're just finishing up talking about what happened this week's fights, what's upcoming. But we're glad you made it. So James the Beast Wilson, 7-0, 6 KOs,
yeah,
here in the studio with the last round. You just signed with Golden Boy. Tell us about that. How'd that happen?
Yeah. So, you know, like past 6 months, I was going back and forth with a lot of different promoters, you know, from Top Rank, you know, Al Heyman, a bunch of different guys. And, everybody gave me the right feel, you know, and I finally went and I met with Robert and a few other guys over at Golden Boy, man, and they were speaking my language. You know, they saw the same vision that I had, and, you know, things just kind of worked out.
So, you know, a lot of people are getting your first exposure to you now.
Right.
Especially now that Golden Boy picked you up, you know, right. A prominent promoter. And, you know, we had some people reach out, oh, no, he's legit. Like, he does his thing. Right. And you even had, you know, at one time or another, you had some type of relationship with the NFL. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Out of college, I actually went overseas first, mm-hmm. Semi-pro in Poland. I came back. I did the NFL regional combine, and I got a call from the Chicago Bears right. to bring me in a training camp. I went down there and spoke to them, and things was good. And they told me that, well, we don't want you to play running back.
Right.
You know, they want to move you to defense, like a stand-up end. And I wasn't having it.
You weren't having it?
Like, y'all were running back.
You made that known. Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, it was at a time where the games was shifting from the big running back to the small, speedy guys. So, you know, at that point, I was just kind of over it, and I wanted to do something different. And I was like, you know what, let me check out this fight thing and see how that works out.
So you were what, 2019, 20?
I was about 24.
24?
About 24, yeah.
Did you ever box before then?
Yo, before that, I never did any, like, organized combative sports. I did, like, karate when I was a kid, but,
yeah.
You know, not long enough to stay with it where I was, like, super sharp or anything.
Right, right. Yeah.
How did you find the transition, you know, from like kickboxing and MMA to boxing? Because obviously it's a different type of stance.
Right.
You know, because obviously you're not going to get kicked.
Right, right.
So how, you know, how is that transition?
I would stop myself from kicking people. you know, it was just small things. I think it actually helped me out more being that I was a martial artist, you know, had a background in karate and Muay Thai and kickboxing, as opposed to just boxing because the footwork was so different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way we would set up kicks and whatnot, the angles, you know, that I brought into boxing, I think that, you know, advanced me a little bit more.
Okay.
Because I had that background, you know, as opposed to somebody who's just been doing only boxing their whole life.
And you're with Fortune in Fortune's gym?
Yeah, over at Fortune's gym, training with Justin.
Hollywood, right?
Hollywood.
And, you know, one thing that's very interesting when we were talking about you before you came on, you were the Los Angeles Times High School Football Player of the Year.
Correct.
What year was that?
This was 2004.
2004. Man, yeah. How was that? Like,
it was good. I was killing it. I was balling, you know. And that was my thing. I was.
What high school were you at?
Well, I went to like six different high schools. Can't say why, but. When I was playing and where I graduated from was Marshall High School in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so once I got there, that's when I kind of buckled down. You know, I studied in my sports in school and things just kind of took off. You know, I was one of those people who you didn't have to tell to work out. Mm-hmm. You know, I was self-driven. I was motivated. My goal was to go to the NFL.
Right.
You know, so I was the person that would be getting all the rest of my teammates up. Like, get y'all ass up. We all about to go around. We about to train. About to work out.
Yeah.
You know, I was the leader. Yeah.
You were also in track and field, right?
Yeah, track and field. I was football, track and field, and basketball. I was also all city and track in 100, the 4x1, the 4x4, and the 200.
Damn.
So I kind of much did it all, you know. I was much lighter than I am now. But
how much do you weigh right now?
I'm about 250 now.
And you were what then?
Coming out of high school, I was 190.
Okay, so yeah. Pretty big difference.
But I still got my speed. Don't
you still got twisted. It? Yeah. Yeah. There's people going to be listening. I don't know if he's got that speed.
Yeah. Don't let the size fool you.
but you actually got a full ride to Concord University, right?
Yeah.
In West Virginia.
Yes.
And you graduated with a degree in sociology?
Yes, correct.
So if you didn't get into boxing or NFL or anything like that, right. what did you want to do with sociology?
I would definitely work with probation, youth, and foster kids and whatnot. Being that I was one of those kids, you know, I was homeless growing up for a long period of time. I ended up going in a group home. I was in the foster care system. So I relate and I understand what those kids are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And me being able to pull myself up out of that, you know, was definitely one of those things where I could go back and give these kids hope and let them see that, look, man, regardless of your situation, you don't have to be a victim of your circumstance. You know, it's about the mindset that you set for yourself and what you want to make out of your life, and you can do it.
How long were you homeless?
About 3 years. So from 12 to 15.
Man.
So at 15 is when I got locked up.
Mm-hmm.
I was in juvenile hall for a bit, and
They gave me an option. I could go to camp and do 9 months, which camp, you do your 9 months, you get out, you're back in the same situation.
Right.
Or I could go to the group home and, you know, then I have structure. I don't have to worry about eating. I got 3 meals a day. You know, I ain't got to do out and do the negative things that got me into that situation. So, you know, it was the best decision that I made. And that's what started me on the right track.
So would you say sports kind of gave you, like football kind of gave you that organization?
Yeah, definitely. It gave me the discipline.
Right.
You know, it set a tone in myself. Like, for one, you can't play if you don't got your good grades.
Right.
You can't get good grades unless you're disciplined enough in order to sit your ass down and do your work. Yeah. So.
Is that something you instill in the kids that you teach now? Because I'm looking at your Instagram, it looks like you're out there and you're teaching kids. And one of them you teach. Did you do strength and conditioning for a high school?
Yeah, I was strength conditioning actually to my old high school that I used to go to where I graduated from, Marshall. And same thing, I kicked their ass. And, you know, it's all out of love. It's a love-hate relationship.
As long as they know that, man. Like, kicking our ass, but we get it.
Yeah, you know, and I still get kids calling me to this day, oh, man, you was a big inspiration in my life.
Yeah.
And instilling in me the meaning of being able to work hard, you know. So.
Who approached you first in terms of promoter?
First, we had DiBella. Mm-hmm. DiBella was first.
And that was when?
This was summer of this year.
Okay, so very recent.
Yeah, yeah. Summer of this year when everything started to really, really jump off.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we went through a lot of different people. DiBella, Epic Sports, you know, we talked to Al, PBC, there's Top Rank. It was quite a few.
So everybody came at you.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, Golden Boy was the most personable man. We was just like homie type. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know?
Yeah.
And they just got it.
Yeah, especially, I mean, they're L.A. based.
Right, and I'm from L.A. I rep the city, you know what I mean? Born and raised. So, you know, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, home team, home crowd. And, you know, like I fought all over the world, you know, being whether it's kickboxing or Muay Thai, MMA, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But enough to like have your home base and having that backing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I read somewhere that when you win the world title as a heavyweight, right, he would be the first LA world champion, heavyweight world champion.
I think the last person who was trying to do that was, at least Southern California, was Chris Areola. Because when he fought Klitschko in 2009, that was a big thing that he was trying to get the world championship. So if you could do it, man.
Well, it ain't no if you can do it. It's just a matter of time.
When you can do it.
Verbiage, baby. Verbiage.
See, I got it. I said it.
You got it.
I said it.
Yeah.
We got to manifest.
Yeah. Right. There it is. When it happens. You know what I'm saying? Definitely. Yeah. That's something we talked about, too. We're going to be the first heavyweight LA champion, man.
Now, do you have any estimated date when they might? Because, I mean, we're assuming they're gonna put you on DAZN.
Correct.
I mean, you know, they have the agreement with them and all that stuff, which is great. You know, that's a big platform, especially with Canelo, Anthony Joshua, and stuff like that.
Right.
So do you have any ETA on the date?
What we're looking at now, they're thinking sometime in early February.
Okay, so that's pretty fast. So,
yeah, you know, once they just get through the new year, you know, I'll know more after the Canelo fight.
Okay.
You know, when you get that out the way, that's a big deal. So, and then we'll buckle down and solidify our date, but it's looking like somewhere in February.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody's always asking, like, man.
Right.
When I know, you'll know. I want to knock somebody out, too.
Yeah. So, sure. No, but it's good, though, because, you know, now that you're technically with DAZN, Golden Boy, and everything.
Yeah.
Eddie Hearn has quite a few heavyweights,
mm-hmm,
obviously. Yeah. So it makes the partnership easier to make cross-promotional fights.
Right.
So,
and I'm coming from all light heavyweights, too.
There you go.
Let's let that be known.
You can make light heavyweight.
Could I make light heavyweight?
Yeah.
No, I'm heavyweight. I'm still heavyweight.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I thought you said you're coming for all light heavyweights, too.
I'm coming for all their heavyweights.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like, Dad, you can make light heavyweight?
Nah, that's too much.
Like, that's a lot.
I was going to say, walking around at 250, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I was like, Dad, you've got a lot of discipline.
You sucked up. Yeah.
But, you know, speaking of heavyweight, you know, obviously we just had one of the biggest heavyweight fights the last couple of years. Fury and Wilder, what'd you think?
It was a good fight. I will say that it was a good fight. Wilder didn't put his punches together, mm-hmm, at all, you know. But it's typical of Wilder. He's looking for the one, that, mm-hmm, one. I think we really saw Fury outbox Wilder this fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Fury was able to do the big man slickness and, but, I mean, honestly, I wasn't impressed with either one. Mm-hmm. But for the fight, for what it was a good fight. You know, he has two knockdowns. A lot of people think he lost. I mean, it is what it is. But it'll be interesting to see the rematch and how he would change up his game plan, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Who do you think the best heavyweight in the world?
James the Beast Wilson.
Besides you.
Oh, my bad. My fault.
He's the second best
heavyweight in the world. You know, I'll probably give it to Anthony Joshua.
So you think Joshua beats both Fury and Wilder?
Outside of myself. Yeah, I do.
Wow. He likes that. He's English.
Yeah.
There you go.
But, you know, he for one, he's a better – him versus Wilder, he's a better pure boxer.
Right.
Than Deontay is, for what we've seen. But also, he has flaws, too. He's also gotten exposed in the last fight with Povetkin?
Yeah. So, I mean, Povetkin's not an easy opponent. Like, he's good. But you're right though. He did show some weaknesses.
Right, and he can be touched.
Right.
So, but again, Wilder doesn't put his punches together.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'd be interesting. But mm-hmm. I'll probably take AJ at number two.
How would, without giving away too much, how would you describe your style?
I describe it as kind of a lost art. I don't say this for myself, but just from like people, like media being compared to Tyson. For one, there'll never be another Tyson, period, mm-hmm. point blank.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm the Beast. I'm not Tyson.
Yeah.
But that style that's similar to his style, nobody does that anymore. It's like a lost art. You know what I mean? And not everybody can do it. I'm very aggressive. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm the one that's coming forward. There is no dancing, running. We're not going to ride the bike. I'm coming forward, and I'm coming to get in your ass. You know what I mean? With control, with head movement, with footwork. So, and as far as I'm concerned, most of the heavyweights right now are robots.
Right.
They're straight up and down. You know, mm-hmm. there's no foot movement. There's no real head movement. There's nobody like me in the heavyweight division, period.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see the comeback of the old peekaboo? The peekaboo defense?
Yeah. Hey, it might be a combination of that mixed with Roy Jones and, you know.
Hey, Roy Jones, man.
Mike Tyson and Roy Jones, that's some combination right there.
You can't stop that, man.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of Roy Jones, I'm assuming, did you watch boxing growing up?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, obviously, you're familiar with HBO.
Yeah.
What do you think about HBO exiting the business?
Oh, it sucks, man. Like, especially for heavyweights.
Yeah.
Like, that was the platform.
Yeah.
HBO boxing. You know, I don't know why they made the decision they made. It was, you know, it was killing the game. That's all we knew coming up, HBO boxing. That's what you wanted to be on, HBO mm-hmm. boxing.
When you made it there, you made it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. That was like, right. So, I don't know, man. They have their reasons behind it, but like with anything, you know what I'm saying, one person steps away, it comes down, the next best thing got to pop up. So
right, somebody's got to take the spot.
Yeah, so we'll see if they'll be able to match up. I mean, look at all the fights that came through HBO boxing.
Man. Like,
come on.
Man, you can't touch their resume right now.
Right, exactly. So it sucks that I'll probably never be on HBO boxing, you know what I'm saying?
You never know.
Yeah, they might, you know, take a little hiatus and come back. I don't know.
You never know.
Yeah, we'll see.
How many times are they looking to have you fight next year?
We're looking about 6 or 7 times next year. So I'm going to be real busy knocking motherfuckers out.
You're going to be real busy.
Yeah.
Real busy. Hey, which is good, though.
Yeah.
Which is good.
It's a good thing.
You know, I get your name out there. Your your record goes up and everything.
Right.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I think, you know, having you in here today, I can see that you're going to be one of those guys that's going to grab the mic and you're going to be calling people out. You're not going to be quiet.
Yeah, because you seem like you're going to have the personality post-fight and even before fight. I mean, you know it's a business at the end of the day.
Right.
And you can sell it with your fist, which is great.
Right.
But if you have a personality, it's even better.
Yeah, it's definitely a combination of both. You have people who's really good fighters, but they have no character.
Right.
They're boring.
Right.
So, yeah, we got both on our side, you know. But outside of that, you know, I'm a very cool, chill dude, man. I'm a father. I'm a humble guy. But when it's time, when the lights is on, it's a whole different monster.
Man. And you said you're what, 250?
250, yeah, about
250. 250 and 6 foot what?
6'1".
6'1".
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so you're not even intimidated by, like, a 6'7" Wilder or anything, the height? You think,
nah.
You got that Tyson mentality.
You know, I get it all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, the heavyweight division has changed. It's all giants now. They're all, like, NBA players. I don't give a damn. That means nothing. I can still touch you.
Yeah.
So, it's better for me, man. I have the leverage.
Right.
You know, so I'm not intimidated by that at all.
I'm excited.
Pulev's been doing it the whole time. Pulev's similar. Right. He's short, but you know he always still gets there and you know gets on the end of that chin and takes people out.
Yeah,
I mean he's
only
got beaten once. Only Klitschko beat him.
Right. Yeah,
and he's short.
Yeah,
he's short
it's
for that division.
It's mindset. Yeah. You're going in like, oh shit, there's a
yeah.
Then you probably get fucked up. Yeah. You're like, I don't give a shit. I'm gonna run through your ass.
Yeah.
And then guess what happened? All them big tall dudes, they be like riding their bike going straight backwards. And then we touch that chin. So
man.
is there anybody in the division at the minute that you've got your eye on? Have you already set out a plan for 2019 and how you're gonna work your way up to somebody like Joshua, Tyson, the Wilders?
I'll put it like this. Like, I don't have beef with anybody.
Of course
so there's
not.
Nobody in particular. I'm like, oh, I'm going to fuck you up.
Of course not.
We can start some. We can start some.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You can start it right here in the last round.
Well, you know what? I'll just say this. I mean, everybody's going to get it. If you're in the heavyweight division and we end up being matched up, you can get it. It doesn't matter who you are. I don't care if it's from Anthony Joshua down to fucking Joe Schmo. Okay?
Yeah.
Everybody's going to get it.
Actually, you know, I'd like to see him fight Jermell Miller.
Oh, man.
I get that a lot.
Because he likes to talk. You like to talk by the sounds of it. You know, like
I get that a
250,
lot.
He's 300.
He's like 314 or something.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
Yeah. We used to fight together in K1.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, so wow. you already know him?
Yeah, I know. We fought quite a few times here in the States, in Japan. Yeah, it's been quite a bit. I've known him for years, probably since like 2011.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How did it go?
Oh, we both was knocking motherfuckers out.
Yeah.
We didn't fight each other. We was on the same
call. Okay. Who got the best of who, right?
Yeah, we never fought each other in anything. So,
okay.
Yeah. He's cool. I like Jarrell.
Big Baby Miller, man.
Yeah.
That's an intriguing matchup. I would love to see that.
Yeah, that would be good.
So where do you see that going?
Well, obviously, I mean, I'm going to side with the beast.
I mean, we know who the first best heavyweight in the world is. Right?
Yeah. Been at Fortune's gym then, have you sparred many local heavyweights around here?
Man, it seems like there's not a lot of heavyweights in LA.
Yeah.
Like, where I don't know where they at. Like,
yeah.
But Chris Areola, obviously, is one that we touched on around this area.
Yeah.
Dominic Brazil.
I think they're over there at Legends.
Yeah.
Him and Andy Ruiz.
Ruiz is there.
Yeah. So, but no, me and none of them guys have sparred as of yet, so...
Do you find it hard to get sparring as a heavyweight?
I do. That was, you know, all the way even back to kickboxing, it's been quite difficult to get a solid sparring partner who's consistent and willing to go in there and make each other better, you know? So, you know, some people got egos, so they, I don't know, it's weird, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually got Deontay Wilder once asked Danny whether he wanted to spar.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So did Tyson Fury's team.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Because I'm 6'7".
Right.
So and I'm like 230-235.
Oh, okay.
And so like when I've interviewed them or been around their team, like, hey, we need sparring partners. I was like, oh no, man, like that's your idea. So I should have said yes.
Yeah. But you said how much?
I should have. But like you said, you know, it's tough to find big guys or you know ideal people in the weight class.
Right. Yeah. Very. So like. Say like getting ready for someone like Fury or Wilder, like where do you find that?
Yeah,
exactly. You mean Deontay Wilder especially has got a very unique style.
Right.
Like you kind of touched on, he only really throws like one or two punches at a time.
Right.
You know, and obviously having that, you know, uncoordinated, very unique style, it's gonna be hard to replicate.
It's kinda like he did karate.
Yeah. He's kinda like all over the place, just throws punches from weird angles.
Yeah.
You know,
it
comes around like that. So
yeah.
I mean, and who wants to get paid to get punched by a 250-pound guy? You know, you couldn't pay me enough money.
Right. Hey, Tyson had to pay his sparring partners.
He did. He did. I'm sure they got paid pretty decently too.
Yeah.
But you know, we appreciate you coming out, James the Beast Wilson here in the studio on the last round. You know, I know we appreciate you coming out from LA because we know it took you a while to get here.
Yeah.
But like we said, you just signed with Golden Boy Promotions. There's a lot of big things upcoming in 2019 for you. I'm sure they're going to keep you busy.
Oh, yeah.
Your name's going to get out there.
Y'all going to hear about James the Beast Wilson a lot.
Yeah. People are going to know your name, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So whatever you got, you want to promote yourself, Instagram, social media, go for it.
Yeah. Make sure y'all go and follow the next heavyweight champ of the world, James the Beast Wilson. Follow me on Instagram, James the Beast Wilson. Facebook, James the Beast Wilson. And Twitter, man. You know what I'm saying? Stay tuned. Yo, what's going down, man? For those that don't know or don't believe, y'all about to find out real soon, man. All right. The only mode I know is beast mode or no mode, baby. It's going down.
I like
champ.
I like it. I like it. Last word, Mike.
Thanks for coming on again, James. You know, I'd like to hopefully get you in another time when we can, you know, do a session just about you, really go over your life. It sounds like you've had, you know, like from being homeless to, you know, being obviously the next heavyweight world champion of the world, the first one from LA.
Yes, sir.
There it is.
You know, try and get you back on. And, you know, if everybody that's listening, if you could just jump on to Apple Podcasts, give us a quick review, you know, 5-star, hint, you know, give us a 5-star review.
That's right.
And then obviously we'll be back next week. Hopefully you're going to do the end of year review, go over the upcoming fighters, the best cards, the best knockout, and all that sort of stuff in the next week.
Yeah. So we'll see you guys next week. This is the last round.
Yeah.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.